Okay, and we're back, and we're going to spend some time with Ted Pike, who has done more to try to protect our freedom of speech than anybody, any single American I can think of, and he's been at it for a long time. The so-called hate laws, of course, as you know, are the usual backdrop to our conversations, which do have a wide-ranging subject matter, and tonight we're going to talk about something a little different. There seem to be more and more problems appearing within the rabbinic community, shall we say, having to deal with sexual excesses and so forth. Anyway, it's a weird scene. We've got a story. Netanyahu, a rabbi, has been charged with raping a 12-year-old girl. This is in Ynet News, an Israeli news outlet, and this is not the first one. There have been many issues of similar bent, of sexual deviancy, in the ranks of the rabbis and other members of the faithful. Anyway, let's find out more about this and what's going on with Reverend Ted Pike. Hi, Ted. Welcome back.
Well, thanks, Jeff. Yes, I just sent out another e-alert, basically vindicating an article I wrote two or three years ago in which I thoroughly documented from the Babylonian Talmud, which is the highest ethical and religious a legal authority for Orthodox Jews in the world today, I documented that, yes, some of the earliest and most prestigious Talmudic rabbis were pedophiles and strongly advocated the sexual molestation, particularly of little three-year-old girls, even of little boys, by women, nine-year-old boys, advocated it as binding Jewish law. And my premise is that this substratum of permissiveness and actual encouragement of pedophilia, which exists in the Talmud, is being acted out today by many Orthodox rabbis. And in my latest article, I document at least 10 or 14 or 15 outstanding cases, pending indictments against such Orthodox leadership.
Hmm. Well, this is another weird one. Let me just read verbatim from this story. Because it's, again, nothing new. It's a common thread. And it's not restricted to people of the Jewish religion either. Let me make that clear. This just happens to be another one in that particular file. Last July, the defendant, a rabbi, asked the victim to wait for him early in the morning at a Netanya intersection. It's a community over there. He picked her up in his car and drove her to the beach. There he told her that she is fated to become the Messiah's mother, and that she must atone for all the bad deeds that she has done so far by having sexual relations with him. Smart man. Mm-hmm. He then conducted a marriage ceremony with the girl while still in the car and swore her to secrecy. At one point, he asked her to take her clothes off and assaulted her. The rabbi told the girl on several occasions that she possesses, quote, destructive forces that might erupt and cause people to die, end quote. And that in order to control these forces, she must have intercourse with him. He also said that she would save her mother by having sex with him. He reportedly assaulted her at several locations, including his office. Moreover, the rabbi asked the girl to bring friends to him. And so she led to, it's not a very smart girl, folks, she led two other girls to his office. He told each one that the war of Gog and Magog, Armageddon, is near, and that she is fated to become the mother of the Messiah and save the people of Israel. The Central District Prosecutor's Office has motioned to extend his remand until the completion of the legal proceedings. A good neighborhood rabbi at work. That was not in the news story. I added that. Anyway, yeah.
Well, you see, this if you read behind the line, between the lines in this article, which I have here also, in fact, I'll probably be coming out with an article about this Ynet article tomorrow. This is loaded with cabalistic Orthodox theology, eschatology, mysticism, and so on. This is an ultra-Orthodox rabbi. He's steeped in the idea that there are occult forces very strong occult demonic forces that can be brought under control by his advocacy and through his curses or through his intervention. And these ultra-Orthodox Jews are extremely suspicious, I should say superstitious people. They wear amulets, they believe in the evil eye curse, they believe in demons and privies and all kinds of stuff like this coming out of the Talmud. There's also an eschatology here in which these Orthodox and the ultra-Orthodox believe, along with John Hagee and the evangelicals. In fact, they're in agreement that there's going to be a big war coming up. And in fact, I wrote an article a week or two ago in which I quoted Michael Savage, who was quoted in WorldNet Daily saying the next big thing now is this big apocalyptic war, and Obama is actually laying the groundwork for a big apocalyptic war that's coming. That's what this rabbi is talking about here to a 12-year-old girl. He's saying there's a big apocalyptic war here coming, and then this terrible prince of Russia, Gog, is going to come down and going to try to destroy the nation of Israel, but he'll be thrown back because the Jewish Messiah will come on the scene and deliver the people and so on. And so all these Orthodox Jews, including this 12-year-old girl, are waiting in keen anticipation for the war of Gog and Magog when Gog and Magog, Russia, and all of his confederate nations are thrown back and the Messiah will appear. And so this rabbi is religiously manipulating this little girl to flatter her to think that, lo and behold, she's the equivalent of the Virgin Mary. She's going to bring in the Messiah that will deliver the Jews from destruction. And if she'll just have sex with him, then she can make that happen. That's pretty enticing entrapment, isn't it?
Well, it sounds like he was to be the father of the Messiah, doesn't it?
Yeah, that would.
It's a little bit of an ego trip, isn't it? Doesn't that kind of make him sort of godlike?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I don't understand how a child at the age of 12 can be so ill-equipped by their parents to deal with something like this. I guess the obedience in this man's local little neighborhood group was consummate, just like the obedience in some of these radical Christian religions, just like the Catholic Church abusing young boys. Come on, it's not the province of the Jewish faith, but it has its own earmarks, its own history, which goes way back, as you said. And
we have to remember how highly regarded these rabbis are. The Talmud teaches that when a great sage, a great Talmudic rabbi, like Rabbi Akiba or Rabbi Simeon ben Yochai, who actually advocated child sex,
that's in the Talmud.
Oh, absolutely. Simeon ben Yochai, let me just tell you a little bit about Simeon ben Yochai. He is considered probably the very greatest rabbi, Talmudic rabbi, of all time. And every year in the city of Meron in Israel, these Orthodox Jews gather by the tens of thousands in his birthplace, Meron. And for a whole week, they dance and they sing and they bring up the vibrations of activity, which is dancing and singing and all kinds of high energy activity, which they believe will cause the Jewish people to ascend to a higher metaphysical or theosophical state, higher up on the what are called the levels of the Sephirot, taking them up to the essence of God. And he is the center of this adoration by tens of thousands of ultra-Orthodox Jews for a full week. Now he is the very one who says in the most blatant, the most pointed language, that it is the right of a rabbi, of a Jewish male, to take as his bride a 3-year-old baby girl, and the very act of copulating with her is the marriage ceremony. There's no need for any marriage ceremony except by that.
Ah.
When he rapes her, she becomes his. So here we have this rabbi out in a car with this 12-year-old girl performing the very marriage ceremony of copulating with this little girl, mm-hmm. which is endorsed by the greatest rabbi, much greater authority than Moses himself, to Talmudic Jews today.
Well, he's just following orders then, isn't he?
Yes, absolutely.
That'll be his out. Ah, jeez, what a world. Hold on, back with Ted Pike, and we'll continue our conversation. Lots ahead. Stay with us. Okay, back with Ted Pike, and talking about age-old problems. You just wonder how long this kind of thing has gone on, I guess, for a long time.
Yes, that is certainly true. But on the other hand, what we have to realize here is that, although I believe very firmly that Almighty God inspired the ancient Hebrew prophets and Moses and the giving of the law and the choosing of the Hebrew people for a purpose of bringing Christ into the world, there was a major change, a major radical decline in the Jewish religion, the Hebrew faith, when the Pharisees, the scribes and Pharisees, came in about two centuries before Christ, largely having migrated over from Babylon, Babylonian captivity. And these Pharisees, Jesus met them forehead to forehead, and he blasted them, he excoriated them as hypocrites, the generation of vipers, full of uncleanness and so on. And out of that Pharisaic tradition resulted a radical inversion of everything that God ever tried to teach the Jews concerning morality and justice and righteousness and so on. And these Pharisees, who Jesus described as the synagogue of Satan, then went on to create the Babylonian Talmud, which is a vast, rambling, anti-Bible full of the exact opposite of every one of the Ten Commandments, every one of the great precepts which God laid down to the Hebrews in the Mosaic Law and the Prophets. And out of this vile brew has emerged now, with the ascendancy of Jewish control in the world and the brazenness of these rabbis in Israel and the ultra-Orthodox, that it's now breaking out to the astonishment of the world in actual child molestation and pederasty and pedophilia. And the thing is that nobody is identifying the true cause of this. They're saying, well, these people live in closed societies and they don't talk about sex and it's all very puritanical and restricted and legalistic. Nonsense. And there are groups like the Amish and the Mennonites and the Hutterites and so on in a Christian context, and you absolutely never hear of any cases of incest or pedophilia among these Christian clannish sectarian groups. But here we're finding outbreaks of literally, there's been one Hasidic sex crime registry, they're claiming up to 99 cases of rabbis who have been who are involved in child molestation cases. This all goes back to one source. It's these definitive statements by Simeon ben Yohai and other great rabbis in the Talmud endorsing child sex. If anybody doubts this, let them come to truthtellers.org. I have a definitive article there. It's called Pedophilia in the Talmud, the Talmud's Dirty Secret. It's called Pedophilia, the Talmud's Dirty Secret. And there I have actual Xerox copies of these statements by these greatest of the rabbis endorsing the seduction of little girls and boys.
Well, I don't want to even go into that childhood circumcision perversion thing. It is so over the top, I just can't discuss it on the radio with any ease of feeling. It's just awful to take advantage of a situation like that and performing a ritual which literally should have been dispensed with, if it should ever have been started, a couple thousand years ago. But it's been going on for how long?
Well, my problem with circumcision is this blood.
Yes, of course.
Sucking out the blood of the little boy's genitals. And this was actually endorsed. There's quite a strong statement by Menachem Schneerson, who was the Kabbalistic ultra-Orthodox rabbi in Crown Heights in New York before he died. He's considered the Messiah by the ultra-Orthodox Jews. And he says that that is necessary to suck out the blood because this is the blood of the covenant that is being sucked out by the mola, or the circumcising rabbi. And what he's saying there is that every Jewish little boy is basically divine. He has this innate holiness and sanctity. He contains within, is in his own veins, the blood of the covenant. And I say nonsense. I say the blood of the covenant was the blood of Jesus Christ, which was anticipated by circumcision and was shed at Calvary for the sins of mankind. But what did these twisted rabbis are doing is they're saying it's necessary for us to suck in the blood in order that we lay claim, not that Jesus Christ gets the Jewish soul, but we get the Jewish soul. We lay claim by taking his blood into our mouths and making sure that every little boy that comes into the world belongs to us. And I say that that's a perversion.
Perversion
of everything that circumcision ever stood for.
Well, of course it is. Using this symbolism to, all right. Okay, now, when we come back after the break, let's survey where we are, Ted, in terms of these hate laws. How many are lurking in the Congress? How many are pending in the Congress? The Congress of frauds, liars, and treasonous traitors. All right, we'll be right back with Ted Pike in just a couple minutes. Okay, back with you and Ted Pike. All right, Ted, where are the vermin with their hate laws right now? What do we know?
Well, although the flood of Republicans and Tea Party people that came into Congress in October are all pro-Zionist, the fact of the matter is that the Democrats suffered a major legislative defeat in that these Republicans are against hate crimes legislation. And as a result, there's been a real kibosh put on new bills coming in, bills largely created by the Anti-Defamation League and the Jewish supremacist lobby. The federal hate crimes bill, of course, was passed. And yet, at the same time, there's been so much criticism of it, and it's so precarious in its constitutionality that I believe that for the moment, the liberals, ADL, SPLC, and so on, are kind of biding their time, letting the hate bill kind of be a sleeper bill there, like certain of the state 45 state hate laws, waiting perhaps to be implemented with full rigor, Canadian style, sometime in the future. So the groundwork we've laid over the past 10 years in militating, educating against the hate laws and warning against the consequences of hate laws in other countries have really paid off. I believe that Eric Holder and Obama and all of them are to a large extent intimidated by the vast groundswell of Christian conservative opposition. On the other hand, let me just continue some of the wins here. The ADL cyberbullying bills, there were two cyberbullying bills, which would promote homosexuality and actually intimidate people of conscience to object to the homosexuality. Those were both roundly defeated in the House Judiciary Committee a year ago. And also ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which would have allowed people of transgenders or those who claimed they were turning into females and so on from going into women's restrooms and shower facilities and forcing employers to hire people like that. That legislation also was roundly defeated, and even Barney Frank and the homosexuals are very wearied in trying to revive that. Of course, the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell was successfully passed, but again, with the Republicans there in the defense committees and so on, there have been Republican amendments and restrictions being placed upon it, which are causing it to drag and slow down, and it's still far from being implemented. On the other hand, there was a very ominous decree made outside of the legislative process by Arne Duncan, the head of the U.S. Department of Education, in which he unilaterally declared, under withering pressure from ADL and other Jewish activist groups, he declared that the Title VI of the Civil Rights Act would be enforced, giving the Jewish religion, basically, giving the Jewish religion special protected status on U.S. college and high school campuses, freedom from criticism, mm-hmm. Concerning broad criticism of the character of Judaism and even Zionism and so on. And that was met with great rejoicing from the liberal Jewish community, and brings into question how vocal and how candid students can be on campus right now, fearing actually that they will be federal thought criminals under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. And then finally, the Defense of Marriage Amendment, of course, Obama has abandoned any pretense, along with Holder, of defending DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, and that also is very, very much in question, exactly whether that is going to be thrown out as a pillar of morality in America. All in all, I am very pleased, really. I'm very pleased that the surge of Republicans and Tea Party people came in and slowed down, if not stopped, a tidal wave of more and yet more very pernicious and destructive legislation coming very largely from ADL.
Right, right. Well, when you look at the Congress, are any new voices coming forward, Ted, that are on our side that have any clout there? That are
well,
up
I would
to
say
date
that Rand Paul is probably the closest, along with his father, of
well,
having
excuse
reservations
me, excuse
about
me.
Absolutely unconditional support of Israel.
Yeah, but, now, let me talk about that. Is Rand Paul or is Rand Paul not a supporter of Israel?
Yes, well, he's a supporter of Ayn Rand. He's named after Ayn Rand, a libertarian guru. And that means a philosophy of non-involvement with Israeli advancement in the Middle East. On the other hand, Rand Paul can say some pretty slavering things toward the Jews, the Zionists, which don't make any sense about being a bastion of peace of all things in the Middle East. No, I learned a long, long time ago that we can't trust in any politician, even the best of the politicians. I'm just saying that of an entire Congress that bows down in obeisance to Israel, and we certainly saw that with the speech of Netanyahu several weeks ago in Congress, the only even simmering or feeble sparks of independence of mind have come from Rand Paul and maybe from his father.
That's it.
That's pretty much it. All the feisty hate bill people that fight against the hate bills, the Louis Gohmerts and the Steve Kings and so on, mm-hmm. they're right there clapping along with all the liberals for more money for Israel. So it's a mixed bag. We've had a big win in holding back even worse hate crimes legislation coming down the conveyor belt, preoccupying me full-time and preoccupying the religious right.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it's ominous how unremitting is the support of Israel and the coalition, the pro-Zionist coalition, including Hagee and all the rest of them. It's a madness beyond belief.
All true, all true. All right. Talking with Ted Pike, and we'll be back. I want to ask him about the state of the 35 million or so American Christian Zionists. Next. Okay, I'm back with Ted Pike. All right, Ted, go ahead if you would.
Yeah, the evangelicals, which range between an estimated 35 to 70 million.
70?
Worldwide.
Oh, worldwide, all right, yeah.
Yeah, worldwide, talking about Africa and Europe and so on.
Mm-hmm.
They are very aware of the mounting criticism of Israel. They're very aware. Their children go to colleges. They're seeing these protests. They're in classes where Israel is criticized. And yet they are in a state of retrenchment, and they don't know what to do about it. But what they're doing is they are clinging to traditional responses, traditional simplistic responses, traditional responses from teachers, Bible teachers, prophecy teachers, literally going back a century. And I had an email, which you published at rents.com, in which I was quoting from Michael Savage, who was quoting from Ezekiel 38 and 39, and he was, WorldNet Daily and Michael Savage were saying that Obama is actually laying the groundwork for an apocalyptic war, Armageddon in the East, in which the forces of the nations will come against Israel and then be massively destroyed in a big Armageddon shootout.
Well, the latest is that we may be planning a strike on Syria. That's what's being rumored now by Debka, which is Mossad Intel. But the Navy is over there, and there's a lot of apparent attention being focused on Syria by American counterintelligence and obviously black ops people.
Yeah, but underlying this pseudo-religious mentality underlines the whole feeling in the Western world that among evangelicals that according to biblical prophecy all the nations will come against Israel in the end times, and they certainly will in due course. Someday I believe that Israel will be expelled from the Middle East again into great tribulation under their false Messiah Antichrist. That's a eschatological issue, but what the evangelicals believe is that if you are anti-Israel, if you are even critical of Israel, then you are part of this massive world prophesied opposition to Israel, which God hates, which God will judge with terrible wrath from heaven, and so on. That's what Michael Savage says. That's what WorldNet Daily and Joe Farah says. And so the name of the game for the evangelicals right now is to stay just as far as they possibly can from any hint of criticism of Israel, lest you be included in those that God rains down fire and brimstone the Battle of Armageddon. In fact, the evangelicals are almost totally incapable of original thought, even of biblically accurate thought concerning the identity of Israel and its misbehavior today and all of the things that we're trying to tell them. They're like lemmings swimming out to the sea. They don't know where they're going. They are just herding as a vast and mindless a bunch of drones that the ADL, a Jewish media, play upon puppet masters.
Well, they are in some ways the scariest of all. They're going to be the last to figure it out. They're being manipulated constantly.
The good news, however, is I'm not pinning all of my hopes on the evangelicals saving civilization. They are the major contributors to the decline of civilization by building up this antichrist world system, Israel, and protecting Jewish media and so on from scrutiny and criticism. The good news is that all around the world, even in the governments of the world, there is mounting a criticism of Israel, blatant criticism of Israel. You can hardly read anything out of Haaretz and even many articles in the Jerusalem Post and the Jewish media now, the private Jewish media, for Jews, I mean, Ynet and the others, in which they are bemoaning the fact that Israel is in a pariah state. It's not someday going to become one. It actually is.
Mm.
And even liberal church organizations like the Lutherans and Presbyterians are boycotting it, and governments are expressing the strongest displeasure. The polls continue to rise in countries like Italy, certainly in places like Spain, 50% of the people believe that Jews have too much power. In Poland, the same figure, 50%, same way in Hungary and others. Many European nations now the people are very critical of Israel, and it's actually becoming fashionable on campuses and in these countries, even in U.S. campuses, to be critical of Israel. And certainly this is a radical departure from the total unconditional support that I certainly experienced when I was on campus back in the 60s and 70s.
Wow. All right. What about the Christian right? Still sleepwalking under the control of people who have no idea what's really going on?
Well yeah, that's...
The old
that's
guard is still there.
Yeah, and there's a crazy lack of integrity in people like Glenn and Hagee and so on, no matter how obvious it is to them who is controlling things and who is corrupting the nation, they continue to be bootlickers of Israel and ADL and so on. It's a massive betrayal. It's a massive spiritual
apostasy. Well, it is a betrayal. Is that word being echoed amongst the Christian right at all? Do they get it? I mean, you certainly are a man of stature. And it is a betrayal.
Yeah. They look at betrayal of Israel as a much greater sin than betrayal of support of Israel. The great virtue is to support Israel blindly, whatever she does. You see, there's an apostasy, there's a heresy within Christian Zionism that says that no matter how wicked and oppressive a Jews may become, God, has a fawning delight with them, and they still remain the apple of his eye, and so on. This is absolutely contrary to everything the prophets, the law and the prophets, especially the New Testament and Paul, New Testament teaching, is that the true Jew is the one who does the works of faith, of kindness and mercy and justice that Abraham did, and those who don't do that, who reject Jesus Christ and blaspheme him, are the synagogue of Satan. And their capital city, Jerusalem, is Sodom and Egypt, where Jesus was crucified. It's not the holy city of the great king and the city of peace. The New Testament is very tart, very realistic about the facts concerning that the Jews who are in opposition to Christ are actually enemies of the gospel. It says that very pointedly, and Jesus warns us to beware of the Pharisees, beware of the teaching of the Pharisees. And all this, of course, is swept under the rug by the evangelicals, who are much more attuned to the Zionist pablum, Zionist propaganda, than they are to their own scriptures.
Well, interesting. I do hear ads. Did you see the video I posted the other day by the American Jewish commentator? I can't remember his name. Contended that the entire Middle East should be given to Israel and all the problems there would pretty much go away. Did you see that one?
I think I saw a caption or title, but I didn't actually watch it.
That's a classic.
I'll try to do that.
Yeah, that's a classic.
The mentality of both Israel and the evangelicals is that we need to have one more big push to drive out all the Palestinians, take everything from Egypt to Syria, Lebanon to the Sinai, and somehow in expelling the final remnants of Arab opposition, suddenly we'll have a peace and tranquility there. But of course, that doesn't take into effect that there are billions of very, very angry Muslims from every direction who will even be surrounding that political entity should it come to fruition, only increasing the outcast nature of Israel.
Well said. All right. What is your goal for the rest of this year, Ted, before we stumble into 2012 and the end of civilization as we used to know it?
Well, my business is to stand on the wall, and I was just on with Rick Adams. I tell him that we have researchers here at truthtellers.org. Every day we go to the Jewish websites, YNET, and to Jerusalem Post, Haaretz, ADL.org, finding out what the Jews are saying among themselves, the supremacist Jews, and taking advantage of the of the blunders, the opportunities they give us.
They do, too.
To explain more fully the threat that's in front of us.
This is really an issue of supremacist psyche running amok. And from that, we see the engenderment and the manifestation of racism, death, genocide, and all kinds of things. So the chosen, supremacist, not all Jews are of that mind. And they are the ones, I've said it before, who are going to have to stand up and help lead the charge to knock this horrible consciousness out and away from their religion.
Absolutely.
Are they going to continue to pay the price? We can't do it without their help, though. So a lot of wonderful Jews participate on this program and write things for the network, and they get it. They understand. We're human beings on this planet, supposedly all together. Ted, thank you for all you do, and great to talk to you again.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, my friend. Be well.